Welcome to the wonderful world of wine, exploring all things wine with you. We are your hosts, Kim Simone and Mark Lenzi, and you can find us on Facebook at The Wonderful World of Wine. Hello, listeners, and welcome to the wonderful world of wine. Each show, we explore trending topics in the wine world and speak to special guests. And this week, we have a visitor all the way from the UK. We are visiting with Tony Edwards, who is a former BBC science programs producer and now a medical research journalist. Welcome to the show, Tony.
Thank you. Pleasure to be with you.
And you are an author as well, and we are really excited to speak to you today about your newest book, which is called The Very Good News About Wine. So absolutely right up our alley, and a lot of the things that we tend to talk about when we talk about wine and health and lifestyle and all of those wonderful things that our listeners want to know about.
Right, indeed. The news is extremely good for wine drinkers. And I mean, the reason that I can tell you that is because I'm one of these nerdy people who enjoys looking deeply into medical research data. And about 10 years ago, I was writing an article about calories and health, and I came across a chance upon the discovery that calories in alcohol don't put on weight. And there's quite a lot of evidence to show this really counterfactual, counterintuitive bit of data. So I thought, that's interesting. Now, we've been told that wine and alcohol is very fattening, and it's almost as fattening as fat itself. So I thought, well, I better go and look up the real data. And I went to the Britain's biggest medical library in the Royal Society of Medicine in London, which have records of medical research going back to 1850. And I got myself a temporary membership and spent 3 or 4 months in there, sort of Xeroxing as much as I possibly could. The Xeroxing was incredibly cheap for some reason. Anyway, that's an aside. So having discovered that the alcohol calories don't count, as it were, they're not bioavailable within the body, I discovered many other health benefits from alcohol in general, one of which, of course, was the heart disease. Now, that one does go back at least 100 years. This was discovered many, many years ago. And in fact, during Prohibition, one of the ways you could actually get a glass of wine was to go to your doctor and get a prescription for your heart condition. So that was obviously something that we knew a century ago. And then there's many, many more bits of research about things like dementia and diabetes and things like common cold and arthritis. All of these, either big or small niggling problems, are actually not exactly cured by drinking alcohol, but they are alleviated and improved by drinking alcohol. Now, of course, it's not, you know, there's a limit to how much you can take. Just like when you take a drug, it says do not exceed the stated dose. And the stated dose on alcohol depends really on what sort of condition you're talking about. But by and large, it's about 32, 35 grams of alcohol a day is the ideal. It's between the sort of the most beneficial and the least risk factor. And that's about a third of a bottle of wine a day. And I wrote the book. It was called The Good News About Booze. And I gave it this populist title because there were 600 scientific references in it. I didn't want to let on to people. There was actually a long list of science references. So I put this populist title on, and that was in 2013. And then in 2016, and I thought, I imagined that people would actually read the book. Our government would read the book and take from it all of the evidence that I showed them. And in 2016, the British medical authorities decided to slash the guidelines in half. So they said, basically, we prefer you wouldn't drink at all because alcohol is dangerous. Mm-hmm. And even, they didn't quite say this, but basically a molecule of alcohol will send you to an early grave. I'm exaggerating, of course, but that didn't. But they slashed the guidelines, the British guidelines, in half. And then all of a sudden, the rest of the world seemed to follow.
That was totally true here. I remember when that happened.
So I thought, this is ridiculous. And it got worse and worse. And so they in Britain slashed the guidelines in half. And then in 2020, Canada slashed the guidelines down to ridiculously low level, like a teacup full of alcohol would send you to an early grave. And then the Netherlands made it even smaller than that, like one unit of alcohol, which is about, you know, like how much you'd find in a very small glass of sherry you gave to your maiden aunt, was actually dangerous. And that everyone was. So I thought, this is ridiculous. And the WHO said that there's no safe level of alcohol intake, which is absolute nonsense. My 2013 book showed conclusively that at a certain low dose, the health benefits of alcohol are extraordinary. I mean, they're really better than any kind of drug or vitamin supplement or any lifestyle change. They are extraordinarily powerful benefits. So I thought, well, I'm going to have to tell the world again. I wasn't planning on doing another book. I'll tell the world again about, you know, my old book. And I thought, well, maybe I know that from the research that wine is the most beneficial health-wise alcohol to drink. So I thought, well, okay, well, I'll make it about wine. So that's why it's called The Very Good News About Wine rather than just The Good News. That's the origin of the title.
Love the way you put the book together, Tony, because you break down each individual subject like heart disease, diabetes, dementia, and you give all the scientific data. But at the end of each chapter, you just give a little summary. If you don't want to go in all those J curves and scientific research, you give a nice summary of what you found. And I want to just start off explaining to our listeners, you mentioned grams of alcohol. So if someone is having wine, I've seen things where they say alcohol units. So like a bottle of wine, which is 25 ounces, is like 80 grams of alcohol, correct?
Correct.
Which is also, they say 80 units. And you're saying the recommended now is, I believe in the United States, I think now it's 28 units, which is like 5.5 ounces for men.
I think you mean 28 grams, don't you?
Right.
Yeah.
28 ounces of that whole bottle, Mark.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. I said ounces. That's me. That's me. Just to clarify for our listeners, that's what we're talking about. But you started out with heart disease, you mentioned. Are you familiar with the Framingham Heart Study in heart disease?
Oh, that was a very famous study.
So that's actually a town very close to us.
Just right near where you are. Yeah.
And that's a study started in 1948, and it's still to this day going strong, showing the benefits of people drinking wine for their heart. Now, when you're getting all this evidence, Tony, I have to ask you this. We always joke, Kim and I, we can find something good out there. We can find something bad out there about drinking wine. Where are you seeing the studies coming from? Are they funded or have some sort of back meaning if something really good is put out versus something really bad?
By and large, the studies are funded by governments. Extraordinarily, they're not funded by anyone in the alcohol industry, which that's a very important marker to put down. But they are by and large funded by governments because they want to improve or to make sure their populations don't drink too much. And so I think they can be relied on to be pretty accurate. Although I have to say that there are some studies whose motivations are not particularly pro-alcohol. And so you do find that there are quite a lot of people in around the world, certain groups in Canada and parts of Netherlands do tend to have a sort of down on alcohol, and then you, lo and behold, you find the studies that they produce come up with the results they want. Drinking is very bad for you, but they do this by quite a lot of deception, and there's a whole chapter on what and how they do that in my book, because I think the politics of alcohol is really rather unpleasant. Obviously, we don't want people to go around bashing their husbands or wives in a drunken stupor or killing each other on the road, etc., etc. So obviously there are downsides, behavioural downsides of alcohol, but the health upsides are so overwhelming that really I think the public should know this. It's a tragedy. It's actually a scandal that they're not being told this. So that you're completely, that your daily glass or two or three with a meal of wine with a meal is not only not bad for you, it's extremely good for you and will reduce, as we discussed, heart disease, diabetes, dementia, and will also make you live longer. And I was particularly struck by the evidence on old people, since I'm a very old fart myself, that old people do extremely well on wine, very well indeed. They need to drink a huge amount, getting on for about a bottle and a half or two bottles a day to have any adverse effects at all. And compared to teetotalers, they live a lot longer. They live longer and healthier lives. They have less dementia and so on. So I think young people will drink too much anyway, but the old people, I think, are the people who need to be reading my book, because it's the benefits of alcohol are particularly great for them, and the benefits of wine, of course.
What age are you considering old people?
Well, anyone over 55.
Oh, I'm almost there. Okay.
Are you?
Yeah, I'm old.
Way past it.
All right, Mark, you're good. You can do that bottle a day.
I'm old.
Yeah, and in fact, there's a study on wine and heart disease which shows that 2 bottles a day will reduce your risk of heart disease by 20%. You know, and that's a big meta-analysis, international meta-analysis. I don't know how much detail your listeners want to get me to go into, but the book has got 300 scientific references, and basically all I've done is list them, and I've tried to make them more palatable by cracking the old joke here and there and making the text a bit lighthearted. And as you said earlier, with summaries at the end of difficult chapters. There's a very, very big chapter, and it's the first major chapter is on cancer. And that, I think, is one of the most important chapters in the book, because there are downsides with cancer and drinking. And I was actually surprised and a little bit shocked to see that the downsides with wine and cancer are still there. I imagined that there wouldn't be any, but there are downsides with wine and cancer. And the biggest ones are the cancers of the mouth, throat and gullet. Now, there's a good scientific reason why that is the case, because when you drink alcohol, the enzymes, when it goes down to your stomach, there are enzymes in your liver that detoxify the alcohol rapidly. But there are no enzymes up in the head and neck area, because they're a long way away from the stomach. So there's a possibility, and this is the theory, that the alcohol in your wine or any alcohol you're drinking can interacts with bacteria in the mouth to produce a toxin called acetaldehyde. Now, acetaldehyde is potentially carcinogenic, so it makes biological sense that there might be downsides to drinking too much going down the throat. However, the good news on that particular part of that cancer chapter is that if you drink about a third of a bottle of wine a day, your risk, paradoxically, of those cancers reduces by a good 50%. Now, I have no explanation for that, and neither does anybody else, but that is the fact. So it just reinforces the fact that at high doses, any kind of alcohol is not good for you, but at moderate doses, that's where the benefits come. And the book shows you where the moderate dose level is. I mean, it's roughly 60 grams maximum a day for men, 30 grams a day for women. That's because women have fewer of those detoxifying enzymes in the liver than men. I don't understand why. I suppose you ought to ask God why he did that. So women, again, come out with any things in life, they come out on the boozing, losing side.
It's interesting, because as a woman, we've always been told that the reason why we're supposed to drink less is because generally we're smaller, and that, you know, we have this different ratio of muscle mass to body fat. And I had never, ever heard that it was more of a liver enzyme issue. So that is an interesting piece of information to learn.
Yeah, the body fat issue, of course, is also there and so on. But the major thing is the enzymes. Now, the other thing with women that I've discovered, and it was actually good news on cancer, is that the risk, the major thing that the authorities go on about with alcohol and cancer is breast cancer. Mm-hmm. It's obviously a very, very scary cancer to have. And I was very pleased to see that actually the risk with breast cancer and alcohol in general is not nearly as bad as it's made out to be. And it's actually quite good with wine. The big meta-analysis on wine and breast cancer, which shows that at the highest level of drinking, to cause a doubling, and slightly less than doubling extra risk in breast cancer, is about half a bottle of wine a day. But that, paradoxically, a bit like the work on esophagus, the risk goes down the more you drink. I'm not quite sure the reason for that, but it's a funny curve, and the curve is in the book. You can see precisely what happened. That, you know, half a bottle of wine is just slightly less than double the risk, and actually less than double the risk of anything is not even worth worrying about. Lung cancer and smoking, for example, is 25 times the risk of lung cancer. So that puts it in perspective. If it's less than double the risk, it's not even worth thinking about. And I think I'll shut up there.
Yeah. I just wanted to follow up on the cancer thing, Tony. I'm glad you mentioned there was some good news out there for breast cancer, because I think of all the talk about cancer and alcohol and wine, breast cancer has always been the one that there really hasn't been much good news about drinking wine and breast cancer. So I'm glad you mentioned something is good about that. And you mentioned the teeth and gums thing. I've seen a lot of studies saying the wine stains your teeth, but it also kills the plaque. So it's a healthy benefit as well. health for your mouth.
Yeah, that's mentioned in my chapter on other things, other good things, a long list of laundry
good
list.
Things.
Other things. Yeah.
I've seen a lot lately being posted about health warnings for cancer now on wine. I mean, we already have health warning that has to go on a statement that goes on the wine now. Are you for or against health warnings?
Much against it, because what would you put on it? To be honest, you know, you'd only cancer that you'd really say is the health list, your health warning is for the head and neck cancers, the esophagus, etc., which are definitely there. Christopher Hitchens, for example, who is the Anglo-American, famous Anglo-American columnist, writer, who drank a huge amount of whiskey and smoked as well. He died of exactly that cancer, because the other thing that smoking also is the very, very big risk factor. When you drink and smoke, you get these throat and neck cancers. What would you put on the side of the bottle? What do you say? Well, okay, there are some cancers, very few, which it might increase the risk of. On the other hand, it'll decrease the risk of heart disease, dementia, diabetes, etc., within a certain dose. So, I mean, I think I'm really against it, because it would reinforce the idea that this stuff has paradoxically good and bad effects, but it all depends on the dose.
You're listening to The Wonderful World of Wine, and we are your hosts, Mark Lindsay and Kim Simone, exploring all things wine with you. Today, we have with us author Tony Edwards. He has two books that our listeners should take part in, The Good News About Booze, and his latest book is The Very Good News About Wine. We are here every week thanks to Franklin Public Radio. You can find our past episodes on SoundCloud and iTunes. For more information about Kim, please go to her website, commonwealthwineschool.com. For more information about myself, please go to franklinliquors.com. We're back with author Tony Edwards talking all the good about wine and alcohol and the bad too, Tony. We see good and bad out there and everything. And I have to ask, Kim and I talk about this a lot. We go for our yearly physical and the doctor tells us we're overweight or what are you smoking? How much are you drinking? And I always get nervous when he asks me because, you know, Kim and I, we taste a lot of wine. I like Same. To say I taste a lot of wine. So every year I try to get more thinking about how do I give him a number. So I used to say maybe a bottle, then I was saying ounces, but now I think I'm going to use units and see. What do you tell your doctor? Are you nervous to say? Should people be nervous giving that information?
I do tell my doctor the truth, and he actually he's not a very good doctor anyway. He falls through the floor and says, "You can't be drinking that much." Mm. I said, "Well, I'm sure you are not far off that yourself."
Give him your book and say, "Here."
You know, they say the definition of an alcoholic is someone who drinks more than his doctor. I think there's a lot in that. Doctors do tend to have a drink problem. That was in my first book, a wonderful story about this guy who used to turn up having drunk vodka all night, and he wasn't able to drive to his surgery. He went there on a bicycle and fell into the hedge en route. And anyway, so the doctors in England do have a special charity for doctors themselves to dry out via the charity. It's very, very interesting. So the doctor clan are basically quite prone to drink too much.
So on the question of we try to tell our doctors how much we drink or don't drink, and it has become very trendy these days for people to be able to purchase non-alcoholic wine or wine that is reduced in alcohol. It's become an extremely trendy thing here in the United States. I don't know if it is in the UK as well. And when I talk to people about non-alcoholic wine, you know, I tell them that when you take something away, you have to add something back. And I'm wondering your opinion on the either health benefits, health negatives of non-alcoholic wine. What are we, if we're giving up alcohol, are we adding something back into it that might be even worse for us than alcohol?
That's an extremely good question, Kim. And in fact, that's one of the reasons I wrote the second book on alcohol, because since my first book, the zero alcohol wines have come into play, as you say. And I had no idea what I was going to find when I did my deep dive into the medical research. I was really, really surprised. Really surprised. In fact, flabbergasted, because, you know, alcohol is a toxin. There's no doubt about that. So if you remove it, you'd think, Well, you remove the toxin, therefore that must increase the or decrease the health risks or increase the health benefits. Nothing at all like that is the case. Study after study after study has been done in the last 10 years showing that when you remove the alcohol from wine, you lose all the health benefits you get from drinking wine. All of them, they're all gone. These studies have been done, they're clinical research studies. You can't do epidemiological studies that take too long to do. So it isn't as if you've looked at great cohorts of thousands and thousands of people who drink zero alcohol wine compared to thousands and thousands of people who drink ordinary wine. No, this is done in laboratory tests on individuals, mainly young men who are short of a penny or two to go in there and have their blood and urine test tested when they drink, when they compare them either real or fake, as I call it, fake wine. And you then get what's called biomarkers. You can then measure certain biomarkers in the blood and urine, and these correlate to things like dementia. Actually, sorry, not dementia, they correlate to diabetes and heart disease in particular, and glucose intolerance and insulin resistance and so on and so forth. And to every single study shows, that when you remove the alcohol from the wine, you lose all the health benefits. It's quite extraordinary. I've got no axe to grind on any of this. And by the way, when you say it's not my work, I'm just a journalist who's reporting what's out there in the medical literature, which of course you don't hear about, which is why I think, you know, the sort of book that I write and a few other people do in other areas on fat and heart disease and so on. We're all journalists, normal journalists, but we've all taken a kind of deep dive into medical literature, which is because the medical literature often contradicts what the official narrative is. I wonder why that is the case.
Well, I was just thinking too that when we hear about the benefits of wine, often the spin will be, oh, it's not the alcohol, it's the polyphenols, it's these other things in the wine, but it doesn't have anything to do with the alcohol. And this study that you're referencing here, where when you remove the alcohol from non-alcoholic wine, it's really, you know, saying that no, that is actually not the truth. So fascinating.
And it's extraordinary, Kim, that's the case. There seems to be this wonderful God-given synergy between the polyphenols in wine, which are the antioxidants that are the good guys, have the synergy with alcohol, and without one doesn't work without the other. This is what the medical evidence shows quite clearly, and there's a whole chapter on that. That was one of the, as I say, one of the reasons for writing the book was to, because I didn't know the answer to the question before I first looked into it. Extremely good news for wine drinkers. The other thing in that same chapter, actually, is some work on the cognitive effects of wine, which show that there's a new polyphenol called hydroxytyrosol, which is created by the body from what it finds in wine in the presence of dopamine in the brain. Now, dopamine in the brain is the pleasure hormone. And so when you drink wine, you get pleasure out of it. And that dopamine interacts with the tyrosine in the wine to produce hydroxytyrosine, which is extremely powerful antioxidant. And that's another extraordinary thing I found. So in other words, you have to get slightly squiffy for wine to have its maximum effect. And I think that's just wonderful how Mother Nature arranged this. It's just extraordinary. Really is extraordinary.
No wonder I'm so healthy.
Yeah, I say that to my doctor all the time. Not to mention not getting colds as much, I feel, which is also in your book. But Tony, I wanted to follow up on the low alcohol wine. Have you done any research if natural wines, organic wines, or biodynamic wines are healthier for you than traditional?
Yeah, there's a whole chapter on biodynamic and organic wines. And again, I was very interested because the biodynamics weren't around 10 years ago when I wrote my first book. And I really thought that the biodynamics, there's been a huge amount of investment in the biodynamics in the industry, particularly in France. Some of the most expensive wine in the world is the Romani Comté Cru, whatever it is, and that's a biodynamic wine. And biodynamics is extremely expensive to introduce, much more expensive. I mean, organics is already expensive enough, but biodynamics is extremely expensive. And I went and visited a couple, two or three biodynamic wines and places. It's one of the things I think about writing books about wine, so you can go and visit vineyards. And I was assured by French and Italians that, you know, this is the latest thing since sliced bread, and of course it's all wonderful. And I was, you know, slightly mystified by the woo-woo around it. But then, no, fair enough, you know. I don't know, fair enough. I mean, I've been accused of being a woo-woo maniac myself sometimes, because I'm quite interested in homeopathy, for example, which is very woo-woo. So I'm not a stranger to that sort of mystical side of medicine. So I was expecting to find in the literature, and there is literature on biodynamics, expecting to find the literature, that this biodynamics would be just overwhelmingly positive to not only the health of the human being, but also the health of the vines. Well, I'm sad to say, and I looked for a long time very hard, and I spoke to, you know, a number of experts in the field, and I just couldn't find anything, not a single study that showed that biodynamics was an improvement over organics. I mean, it's obviously an improvement over ordinary wine because there's no pesticides in it, but there's no improvement. And I just, to the life of me, scratching my head as to why these really big vineyards, very famous vineyards, are spending a fortune on this stuff. And they could just stay organic and spend less money and have the same outcome. In fact, one study initially shows that the biodynamic farm or area had a worse outcome on the biodynamic side than it did on the organic side. And there's been quite a lot of work in comparing plots of land in California as well, biodynamic versus organic. So I was really mystified by that, and I'm surprised by the answer, and I was a little saddened by the answer.
Tony, I also wanted to ask you about wine ingredients and related to health. There's a lot going around the USA now to add ingredient labeling on wine. Do you think this is a good thing for health of the wine drinker to know what is in there, even if it's just nutritional value? Or do you feel there's a big difference between the nutrition and ingredients to promote wine as being healthy?
To promote wine, I think the list of ingredients would be so long, you just couldn't fit them on the side of on a label of the bottle. I think all you could say is this wine, like all our wines, all wines contains 1,000 polyphenols, for example, and these are meant to be very good for your health. They're antioxidants and so on. I think not a bad idea to label. But do people drink wine for its health benefits? I think they drink wine because it's good with food. One of the things I show in my book is that meat, for example, when you eat meat, it produces toxins in the gut, which is not a good idea. But some studies have shown that when you drink wine with the meat, those toxins are pretty well eliminated. And that is extraordinarily. And again, I keep on going back to God and Mother Nature. There's something about this substance that comes from God's own earth, and man has managed to fabricate into this extraordinary liquid that has such enormous health consequences, enormous health benefits. The other thing, having mentioned the gut, is, and again, this is new since my first book, there's now this great craze to look into the gut health. Mm. The gut is now called the microbiome because it's full of both good and bad bacteria, and these are extremely good for the immune system, etc., etc., etc. We now realize that the gut is being called, in fact, the second brain, because it actually produces brain chemicals down in the gut, which then go up into the brain through the vagus nerve. So I was again interested to find out about microbiome and wine. And again, they've done this experiments with fake wine and real wine. The fake wine has no effect on the microbiome, whereas real wine has extraordinary benefits on the microbiome, making the gut bacteria as healthy as possible. The gut bacteria are meant to be as diverse as possible. You want a perfect balance between healthy and unhealthy. And this is what research shows. And real wine does, in fact, make your gut extremely healthy. It's another miracle.
When it comes to gut health, and we're talking about wine specifically here, what does the research show about other types of alcohol? Is it the alcohol part of it? Is it this combination of alcohol being made from grapes as opposed to alcohol being made from, say, grain? Because I'm also a beer expert, so of course I have to bring in beer somewhere at this point. But this whole idea of it being much more complex than humans, I think, tend to think about these things. And especially when all of this information gets distilled into a form that the public can understand. Mm. It's like trying to like work with the least common denominator here. So it's like we lose a lot of the nuance. And it seems that a lot of the nuance is that these things work together. We don't necessarily know why or how, but we just know that it happens. So exactly. I wonder how the other how other forms of alcoholic beverages that people regularly consume, how that also affects the microbiome.
Well, there's been a lot of work done by Professor Tim Spector in London on the microbiome, and he's been interested in alcohol too. And he's followed a set of twins for years and years and years, because he works with twins so they don't get any genetic differences. And you can then do controlled trials comparing one to the other. And he's shown that actually he was one of the guys who found the wine and gut health connection. But he also, when he gave cider, beer, spirits, none of that had any effect at all. So again, going back to the synergy that you just mentioned, the communication, the junction between polyphenols and alcohol in wine, mm-hmm. that is seems to be the major kind of beneficial factor, and it seems to work with the microbiome too. So as I say, you know, wine is the elixir of, seems to be the elixir of the gut, if not the elixir of life.
That is so fascinating.
Tony, I always have a joke that I used to when I teach basic wine classes, I would hand out one page sheet and it said all the health benefits of wine. And I used to stick in a little line. It used to say, does not prevent pregnancy. And it took a while for people to kind of get my joke. But right. So that's not in your book. That's not in the book.
That's a very good one.
It's a really good line.
That. It's on my handout. You want to teach about wine, you have to put that disclosure in there, just like you put disclosures in the book, right?
Ooh, that's so good.
One quick thing, Tony, I have to ask you, because I'm not a science guy, you're the science professional. All these studies that you put in your book and everybody uses, they talk about the J curve. Can you explain to the listeners just an everyday explanation of the J curve so when they read your book, they know what's referred to all the time?
The J curve is, it's much easier to see it visually because it's difficult to imagine in your mind's eye. The J curve is basically a graph of what happens when you drink a certain amount of alcohol. In, say, for example, in heart disease, the first few glasses of whatever you drink, as you know, heart disease is prevented by all alcohols, not just wine. Then they look at the J, you begin to see the beginning of the J, because the risk factor for heart disease goes down. That's the beginning of the J. And then the bottom of the J is the absolute nadir of, or the maximum reduction in risk at that level of alcohol intake. Then as you drink a bit more, you go up the curve of the J, and then that's when the risks start to increase. And then as you drink more and more and more, it turns into a hockey stick effectively. So that is the J curve, but it's very difficult to do that, to explain that on the radio.
Right. I just want people to kind of understand you're going to reference that a lot in all these studies. So there's a point where it bottoms out and that's the volume basically that's good for you, correct?
Yeah. It's the least risk. Yeah.
Okay. Great. Appreciate it. Well, I've learned a lot. I mean, Kim and I are always promoting wine, and there are these sad things about the abuse of alcohol. And I've seen many things where you referenced a lot of these studies say it's actually better for you to drink some wine than to not drink at all. Correct, Tony?
Absolutely correct.
But then,
and of course, that's what sticks in the craw of the medics who are the prohibitionist lobby, which is actually taking over more and more of the wine or alcohol politics. And the WHO now say there's not a single drop of alcohol that's good for you. And of course, that is completely contrary to the evidence.
I just don't understand why the big brands that, like in US, we have, you know, the Gallows, these huge corporations, why aren't they leaking more of these things to promote their brands?
I've spoken to the alcohol industry about this stuff, obviously. And I've said, you know, you really should be, you know, thumping a bit more and beating your drum. And they say, you know, the politics of this is very delicate. If we start going around, you know, and say wine is good for you, alcohol is good for you, then we really get clobbered. And in fact, in the European Union, which you may have heard of, which the UK is thankfully out of, the European Union forbids you to say that wine or alcohol has have any health benefits at all. You are not allowed to say a single word about that. So there's a huge censorship about this work. huge censorship. Yeah. Anyway,
I really don't get it. Like, I don't understand why the government is so afraid of saying that wine can be good for you. Maybe it's just because government tends to be all or nothing. Moderation is not necessarily something that, certainly not that American culture, you know, that if you're in the middle and you have nuance, it tends to put you in an uncomfortable situation. And as we see with our politics these days, it's like the only people who are getting any, attention are either side of things. But if you're in the middle, you're kind of lost.
They have a contempt for the general public, to be honest, don't they? I mean, they just don't think people are too stupid to get the nuances.
I think that that's
part of it. All amount of something is good for you, and a lot of it is bad for you. Just like a drug, you're not to exceed the stated dose, you know? Because otherwise your side effects are huge, and you'll die from a drug which otherwise might cure you of X, Y, or Z.
Right. But if you tell somebody, yes, you should drink alcohol, and then they drink to excess, at least here, you're going to get sued. So that's probably a lot of it as well.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Tony. It's a pleasure to talk to you today and for our listeners to learn about you and your book. And we've learned a lot, and we appreciate your time.
This was lovely. Like, just went chatting with you. So thank you so much for the time difference between where you are and where we are. And we really appreciate you taking the opportunity to talk to us. Thank you for listening to us today on The Wonderful World of Wine. We have been your hosts, Mark and Kim, with our special guest, Tony Edwards, the author of The Very Good News About Wine. You can find our past episodes on SoundCloud and iTunes, and we are supported by Franklin Public Radio. Cheers.
Cheers. Wine, wine, wine.